Hi and welcome to this special episode of Papierstau Podcast, in which we talk to a very special guest. We've already loved his powerful poetic short story collection Friday Black. Now in his first novel Chain Gang All-Stars, Nana Kwame Adjei-Brenya shows two female gladiators taking on the prison industrial complex and entertainment culture. It's our Roman Empire, and in more than one sense. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the wonderful Nana Kwame Adjei-Brenya. So first of all, Nana, thank you so much for being on our show.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
We already loved Friday Black and now your new novel as well. Chain Gang All-Stars tells the story of people who are incarcerated in privatized prisons and can opt to join their prison's battle squads, the so-called chains, and become combatants in televised death matches. So their lives and death are turned into media spectacles. And if they survive for 3 years, an almost impossible task, they are granted their freedom. How did you come up with the topical combination of a media spectacle and a prison industrial complex? I mean, we even added footnotes underlining how close many aspects are to actual reality.
Thanks. It's a great question. I think I'm really interested in systems and sort of the what we explicitly or implicitly subscribe to as a culture on a sort of maybe local level all the way into like the global civilization level. And in terms of chain gang, I think that the prison industrial complex is a system that is, we all sort of acknowledge, is violent and harsh and extremely like, you know, can be extremely painful. And I wanted to create a situation where that sort of implicit understanding that we never, that is very sort of, again, not active, something we kind of know but don't have to do anything about, could become a little bit more active. So what if we were one step closer to the horrors of the prison industrial complex by being fans of it, if you want to call it that, which again is actually really not so far from reality, as in the real Angola prison, they really have rodeos that are filled with prisoners and people pay tickets to come see it. So to be honest, the best inspiration was just real life.
In this context, I'd like to talk about the concept of hard action sports that you introduce in the text. So sports language is used by the TV executives to, in a way, legitimize the death battles and also to dehumanize the combatants, who in these cases are criminals but are also very vulnerable inside the system. Why did you choose to present sports almost as a cover to reframe the brutality?
I think, first of all, I'm a fan of sports, and I think that one thing that sports already does well is actively commodify individuals, usually with their consent. You know, you might be a player becomes a card, a trading card, or a player becomes a action figure, a toy figure. You know, sports is a vehicle through which we're really comfortable turning a human being into sort of this symbolic figure that may be transcended of themselves, but is also probably a reduction of themselves to their ability to produce in some type of athletic context. And so I think that sports already gives us a practice in terms of transforming our perception of a person to something other than their full capacity of a human being. Obviously, that said, that can be something that can be beautiful and something that we pay attention to in a way that we honor sort of their hard work and effort. But almost always, and especially in the context of like global capitalism, it can be a reduction because we think of these people as solely individuals who are good at basketball, are good at flipping, or on a balance beam, or whatever sport you want to insert. So once that's true, what if the sort of hand that was guiding that perception was a little bit more sinister? What if that hand guiding that perception in commodification was the government in a sort of violent context? And so I guess basically like sports made sense because I feel like we already had that muscle, that transformative imaginative muscle. That is that a muscle that can turn a human being that we all know is just as something as same as us, as something other than us, and And how could, and I feel like the sports gives us an avenue where we're already comfortable transforming someone in our minds. And then I just had to add like a little bit more sinister energy to it, a little bit more of the prison industrial complex energy to it, to get my concept for hard action sports.
I found that idea really haunting because it reminded me of the Jewish linguist Viktor Klemperer, who did research during the Third Reich, where they also used sports metaphors to raise support for the war effort. Yeah. So really haunting idea to incorporate.
It's a real thing. I think when we think about it, we're all sort of familiar with the idea that, you know, we even very, people consider this very, very kind would be extremely brutal towards someone if the athlete for a team they liked did poorly. And again, if you take it farther enough in football, like football, not American football, but soccer football, mm-hmm. a goalie does poorly in a big enough context, his family might die in real life. And again, it's something that I don't think anyone thinks it's fine, but it represents a really stark dehumanization for people to go that far with something like sports. But it happens.
Your father was a defense attorney. How did he inspire your story?
Yeah, so probably in more ways than I'm even able to necessarily perceive. But one thing was, and I've talked about this a bunch, maybe you've heard, like, I was probably 10 or 11 when I came home one day and he told me he was defending someone who had committed a murder. And I had been kind of like, not resistant, but sort of just like surprised or shocked that he would be doing something like that. And I remember him being, like, why would you do that? You know? And my father, just in his own way, basically reminds me that yes, someone had committed murder, but life is not so simple. It's not that simple. And in a lot of ways, just him saying that was like a important part of me being able to write this book. I think that he instilled a willingness to sit in the complexity and nuance that all people deserve. And just by the fact of his job, I sort of assumed there was some type of honor in defending people who had maybe done wrong, which forces me to at least think about the so-called bad guy, you know, in a way that's a little bit more complicated than sometimes our culture asks us to think.
We're talking on International Women's Day today, and the objectification and fetishization of women, especially Black and queer women, is an important topic in your novel. The main characters are Loretta Thurwa, who almost made it to the three-year goal, and her lover Hurricane Stax. How did you create these characters?
Over time, for me, like the act of creating a character, just observing them with love and compassion, to be honest, it's a mysterious process because they kind of tell you who they are as much as you decide. And so with Thurwar, I had the idea of this woman in the eye of the arena who had definitely done something terrible and hated herself a little bit, but was someone who generally was trying to be a good person, had some honor, had like a resolve, had, I don't know, some kind of moral ethical backbone. And having that as a guiding post, just watching her through the pages, she sort of became someone who also had a maternal instinct, who also had a little bit of competitive flair, and a lot of things like sort of revealed themselves to me, and she became more real with Stax. I needed a counterpart who could understand their war situation 100% in an embodied way, and that's how she kind of became a woman. But beyond that, I also knew that she was going to be someone who had not done anything truly wrong, but was still forced in this position, and who had every reason to be hateful, but had adopted an attitude of grace. And that was really big for Stax, and someone who just embodied this like continual grace. So that was a big part of what I was thinking about when I thought of her.
I really loved how complex you rendered these characters and how their humaneness carries the story. And also what you just said about your dad, who helped upholding the justice system and upholding justice in society by extending the power of the law to everyone. And there's also this dark message in the book, because I felt like it goes back to very dark ancient human impulses, almost to the Roman idea of Panem et Circenses, so the creation of bloody spectacle to sedate the masses and to distract from what the ruling class does to enable them to go on doing whatever they please. So an idea of righteousness in cruelty. Do you think literature and telling stories can help raise awareness? And just for the people who are listening, while we are talking, you're wearing a hat that says a better world is coming. Do you think it's coming through literature?
I hope so. I actually do, though, to be honest. I think one of my best self, I am like sort of an optimist. I think that we have to remember that we are the world. The book is really interesting, this idea that we ourselves, just even you and me, having the capacity to say, you and me believing that the world can be better, is directly making the world better, because we are part of the world. And even as small as we might be, we are part of it. We are in the game, so to speak. We are not just observers. I think because of the massive inequity that exists in the world, sometimes you think of yourself as, to use another sports reference, like as like an audience member to the world, as opposed to like a player. And that's sort of what the ruling class depends on. It depends on you thinking you are just an audience, but you are actually a player. And if you remember that you're a player, then whatever you can make, you can change the game, so to speak. And so I really do believe that we can grow to a much more compassionate world. I think we can grow a space where grace is the standard, where compassion is the standard. I think we can reimagine most of our institutions through a more compassionate lens. And as a result, I think we could have a completely better world. I'm certain of it.
Nana, thank you so much. It was such a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you so much. I really do appreciate the time.